What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are. And it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
I'm Josh Hammer, and this is America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election, and for that matter, all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our American way of life. On today's show, we'll take a deep dive into yesterday's oral argument at the U.S. Supreme Court in the abortion pill case. What are the justices going to do when it comes to this thorny question? Implicates all sorts of interesting legal questions. I think we know the answer. Might not be the answer many of us wanted, but we'll get into all that in today's deep dive. And then later in today's closing argument section, going to go off the beaten path a little bit again. I spent the evening last night at the Miami Open, at the professional tennis tournament here in the South Florida area. Going to talk a little bit about that and why I think events like that are just so, so important in today's hectic news cycle. But for now, let's start off, as always, by going around the horn. We begin in, of all places, Russia, where a Russian court on Tuesday yet again extended the pretrial detention, if you can even call it pretrial detention in the Russian legal system, for Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. So he was arrested about a year ago now, in March 2023, by the FSB, the Federal Security Service, which in Russia is the successor agency to the KGB. He has been accused on totally bogus grounds by Russia of, quote, acting on the instructions of the American side and of acting in a general espionage abetting fashion. If you know anything whatsoever about the Russian legal system, to the extent that that phrase is not an utter oxymoron, you know that this is totally bogus. Now, it is worth just emphasizing that this is still going on. And I'm not necessarily kind of an old school, you know, ACLU, Pentagon Papers kind of civil libertarian, but this is unabashedly, nakedly wrong stuff here. And I think it's important for those of us with any kind of a platform when we're speaking of legal proceedings to talk about that this is just a total and complete sham right now, no matter what your thoughts on the Russia-Ukraine conflict may or may not be. It frankly has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with this, but this is just totally wrong. I give the folks at the Wall Street Journal credit for continuing to beat this drum. I hope that other folks in media continue to do so as well, because it really is just absolutely wrong. We move from Russia to the United Kingdom, staying on the international front for now. And a court in the UK has, for now, denied extradition of Julian Assange to the United States because the British court is essentially asking the United States for more assurances that they will give Julian Assange a fair shot to make his First Amendment case. This was interesting that you would have a foreign panel kind of weigh in on domestic American constitutional issues of this nature. Specifically, you had a panel of two judges who basically gave the United States 3 weeks to give them a series of assurances around Julian Assange's First Amendment rights, and also they sought assurance that he would not receive the death penalty. Well, Julian Assange is an Australian citizen, so that's another kind of interesting wrinkle in this particular saga, although he has been living in London for much of the past decade or so. I mean, how is it possibly the business of British judges to try to extract concessions and guarantees from America? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense here. The mind is baffled. My mind is reeling as to how this could possibly be something that is within their legitimate jurisdiction. Now, I'm not necessarily calling for the death penalty of Julian Assange or anything like that. I do think that he committed clear and fairly transparent crimes. The idea that Julian Assange is a hero has never made any sense whatsoever to me. I never really bought the Edward Snowden is a hero stuff either, but I think that there's a much stronger case to defend Edward Snowden at a very bare minimum. And frankly, over time, I've gotten closer to that position. It's not my position, but I've gotten closer to it. But I think there's a stronger case for Snowden than there is for Julian Assange, for God's sake. The guy who was giving U.S. military secrets to Al-Qaeda, literally directly putting our men and women serving overseas in harm's way. Absolutely bonkers stuff right there. And the U.S. has been seeking this extradition for a very long time. They're going to have now some time to put together this guarantee that the British court is apparently searching for. They're going to have 3 weeks to do so there. I just don't understand how this is possibly the business of a foreign court to get into how the United States operates when it comes to our own First Amendment. Look, do the U.S. and the U.K. operate as peer allies that respect each other's legal systems or not? If the U.K. actually respected the American legal system, then I don't understand why they would be making these sort of demands on us. Finally, we go to New York City for our main Trump legal update of the day here in our Around the Horn segment. And the Trump legal update of the day is, you guessed it, that there was another gag order placed on Donald Trump, this time by Judge Juan Merchan. This is the judge overseeing the prosecution of Donald Trump in Manhattan, in New York County, New York, from Alvin Bragg, the Soros-funded prosecutor, on so-called hush money payment grounds. Specifically, that would be hush money payments for fraudulent bookkeeping purposes made in furtherance of some still unspecified crime. We believe that is campaign finance or election laws or something along those lines. Again, Alvin Bragg has not exactly spelled it out for us. He thus far has been quite reticent as to what exactly his charges are. That would be the very polite way of saying it. The more impolite way of saying it would say that he's just running a complete sham operation in fairly Stalinist fashion, somewhat similar to his colleague Tish James's case. So it's very much kind of a show me the man, I'll find you the crime sort of situation there. In any event, the judge there, Juan Merchan, in this particular criminal case, issued a four-page order on Tuesday, March 26th, that limited Donald Trump or others acting on his behalf. They are not allowing Trump to comment publicly about witnesses or prospective jurors in the hush money payment case. He is also restricted from commenting about lawyers working on the case, court staff, or their families, with one exception. Donald Trump is allowed to talk about Alvin Bragg himself, the Soros-funded prosecutor who is leading these ludicrous charges, and he has no compunction and no shame for doing so. This case is so utterly frivolous that CNN, New York Times, all the usual liberal media outlets have had a very hard time defending it. The New York Times editorial board infamously put out a mealy-mouthed editorial after this particular prosecution dropped. It was the first out of the gate last year. So this is the third gag order against Donald Trump in recent months. He has a gag order in place in Jack Smith's D.C. probe, the probe pertaining to the 2020 election. Judge Merchan yesterday, by his own admission, said that he sought to essentially mirror the scope of the D.C. Circuit gag order when he issued this gag order yesterday in New York State Court. And then there is a similar gag order going on in Donald Trump's civil case in New York, the now infamous case pertaining to Tish James and so-called fraud against the Trump Organization. So, look, there are all sorts of constitutional problems when it comes to slapping gag orders around of this nature. You have obvious First Amendment problems when it comes to denying your right to free speech. You have possible Sixth Amendment problems when it comes to your Confrontation Clause right to confront the witnesses who are accusing you of crimes in a criminal case such as this, which is what this is. So there's all sorts of possible constitutional problems here. But for now, I think you should interpret it as a possible indication, as if you needed more data, preliminary data, that this is not necessarily going to be the most kosher prosecution in the world. And really, it's not going to be the most kosher prosecution in the world for the very simple reason that this is Donald Trump, who is enemy number one of the Biden, Merrick Garland, Jack Smith regime. That's it for today's Around the Horn segment, folks. Up next in today's deep dive, we're going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court and take a look at yesterday's big oral argument in the abortion pill case. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. As discussed on the show, there was a big oral argument at the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday on Tuesday, March 26th, one of the final major oral arguments in this 2023-2024 U.S. Supreme Court term. This is a case titled FDA versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. It is a case involving mifepristone, the abortion pill. Mifepristone is the most common abortion pill now in use in these United States. So-called chemical abortions, medical abortions, whatever you want to call them, they now account for roughly 63% of all abortions in America, according to the pro-abortion Guttmacher Institute. That is a shockingly high percentage. That is up from just over 50% a handful of years ago. So the percentage is only going up, it seems, in the aftermath of the Dobbs case of June 2022 that overturned Roe versus Wade and put the issue of abortion back to the people, back to the democratic process yesterday. As I've explained on the show, the case here basically involves pro-life doctors, religious doctors, and doctors who represent women who have been harmed from the abortion pill, from chemical abortions, who are basically bringing suit to challenge the way that mifepristone was legalized and the way that it has proliferated because of the FDA over the past 10 years or so. And specifically, this involves actions from the FDA in 2016 and 2021. Those actions entail making it so that you can use mifepristone to abort your unborn child from 7 weeks up to 10 weeks, so extending the gestational age limit. They have now permitted not merely doctors, but also nurse practitioners to go ahead and send down mifepristone to patients, to women who are seeking to abort their unborn children. And perhaps most egregiously from my perspective, they have even waived any kind of in-person requirement to actually get the abortion pill, which means that in theory, in many states, you actually could literally walk right into your Walgreens and CVS and actually buy a pill over the counter that could abort your 10-week-old up to unborn child. Really gruesome stuff as a pro-lifer myself, and makes me extraordinarily nauseous, for lack of a better term. In any event, this was a big argument at the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. And one of the major threshold questions here, perhaps the threshold question that the trial court judge in this case, the fantastic conservative judge Matthew Kaczmarek, based in Amarillo, Texas, that he was dealing with and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals was dealing with, that's the court that I clerked on years ago, what they were dealing with, what Judge Kaczmarek was dealing with, they were dealing with the threshold question of standing. Now, standing, to break down the legalese, is what our system of law is, the doctrine that our system of law has in place that basically demands that you have to be able to show an injury in order to bring a certain lawsuit. In other words, you are not able to simply show up in court and demand an action unless you have been directly affected by that action. You can't just show up there and demand that the government do something. There are many other legal systems that have liberalized standing rules, if they have standing rules at all, and it ultimately amounts to complete and utter chaos. So to give you just one example, there was this whole debate in the state of Israel last year, and this debate will probably come back again after the current war effort against Hamas is sufficiently prosecuted. They had this whole debate last year about Israeli judicial reform, and one of the elements of this debate was whether or not any citizen could bring a suit against any policy for any time. So, for example, if you are someone who opposes the maritime rights deal that the previous Israeli government inked with Lebanon and Hezbollah back in 2022, can you go ahead and try to sue against an international agreement, even if you're just a regular person? To the median American, that might strike you as insane, and the reason why that strikes you as insane is because we actually have standing doctrine here. So, admittedly, even as a pro-lifer who is very sympathetic on the underlying merits, as well as the actual separation of powers and administrative law questions, to the plaintiffs and thinks that the FDA has overstepped. Admittedly, even from my perspective here, there is a real question about standing. Now, I think if you go back and you look at the lower court opinions, I think Judge Kaczmarek and the Fifth Circuit panel did a decent job of trying to sift through this, just to kind of rehash what the actual standing test is. So the case that I like to cite when it comes to modern Supreme Court standing doctrine is a 1992 case called Lujan versus Defenders of Wildlife. This is the case that often gets cited for the three-step standing test in order to get into federal court these days. And the first factor in the Lujan's test is, quote, "You have to suffer an injury in fact, then that injury in fact has to be concrete, particularized, and actual or imminent, not conjectural or hypothetical. Second, you need a causal connection between the injury and the actual challenged conduct of the defendant, such that the injury is, quote, fairly traceable to the defendant's conduct. And finally, the final step is that it is, quote, likely and not merely speculative that the injury will be redressed by a favorable decision." So in order to get standing in federal court, you need a concrete injury. You need to show a traceable connection between the challenged conduct and your injury, and you need to show that a court is well positioned to issue a remedy. You need all of that just in order to get into court. And finally, it seems on March 26th, liberals have rediscovered their long-lost commitment to being standing hawks, for lack of a better description. Many kind of right-of-center jurists and Supreme Court justices over the years have been standing hawks. Justice Antonin Scalia was perhaps the most vocal and the most famous of all of them there. But liberals traditionally have not always been particularly hawkish on the issue of standing. The Massachusetts versus EPA case comes immediately to mind. This was an infamous case that the Supreme Court decided on a 5-4 decision back in 2007. Massachusetts back then, along with 11 other states and several cities, brought suit against the EPA to force the EPA to regulate the emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. And they literally did so because they claimed that their states and their shorelines, like their beachfronts, were going to be eroded and harmed. Now, is that really a concrete injury fairly traceable to the EPA's conduct of CO2 emissions and other greenhouse gas emissions? Absolutely bat crap crazy stuff. Are you freaking kidding me? A Massachusetts EPA has to be one of the most absurd cases that the Supreme Court has decided over the past 25, 30 years or so. Nonetheless, all the liberals, joined by former so-called swing justice Anthony Kennedy, all joined the majority of this case over the dissents of Scalia, Thomas, Alito, and John Roberts. So which way are you going to have it, liberals? I mean, are you going to have it one way or the other? Do you like standing doctrine only when it applies to your particular causes? Do you dislike standing doctrine only when it does not apply to your particular causes? How are you going to do this? Do you guys even purport to have a modicum of intellectual consistency on this particular issue? The whole thing just frankly stinks to high heaven. One other note that I would like to make on this, it seems like the plaintiffs are going to lose based on oral argument and lose in potentially lopsided fashion. You had, perhaps predictably, all three Trump-nominated justices Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch, who seemed like they were sympathetic to the FDA here. They didn't want to get into this business of having federal judges second-guessing FDA decisions. Neil Gorsuch said the case was a, quote, prime example of turning what could be a small lawsuit into a nationwide legislative assembly on an FDA rule. Unfortunately for the plaintiffs, it seems like Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas were the only two justices on the high court that were even remotely sympathetic to the claims of the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, which was represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom, the wonderful legal group ADF, and their outstanding lawyer, Aaron Hawley, who, by the way, happens to be the wife of the U.S. Senator from Missouri, Josh Hawley. That is a power couple if there ever were one. But Justices Alito and Thomas seem to be the only ones even remotely sympathetic to the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine's claims in this case. Alito and Thomas both made reference during oral argument to the Comstock Act, which is a 19th century law prohibiting using the United States Postal Service for mailing unlawful drugs and pornography and other illicit materials. This is a clever and I think actually correct legal argument that has been advanced over the past year and a half, 2 years or so by Jonathan Mitchell, the former Solicitor General of Texas, who was also Trump's lawyer in court, if you recall, for the Trump versus Anderson case, the ballot access case. I've been friends with Jonathan for over a decade, one of the right's absolute most brilliant legal minds. The Comstock Act argument really kind of is Jonathan's baby. And it seems like Alito and Thomas are interested in that argument, but really no one else seems to be chomping at the bit there. So final note there, and it is a disappointing day to report on what happened at the court, but yet again, as if we needed more evidence that Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch are simply not the conservative stalwarts that Alito and Thomas are, we got yet another disappointing data point yesterday. Very much like the big tech First Amendment case, Murthy versus Missouri, that we discussed last week, I really hope to be proven wrong when it comes to this case. But as of now, it is hard to be optimistic, unfortunately. I do not want to mislead you. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, we're gonna go off the beaten path a little bit here. Let's talk about some professional tennis. Sounds a little funny, but we'll get into it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's time for our closing argument. And my closing argument today to y'all is actually quite simple. Last night, I went out with my wife and a few of our friends to the Miami Open, which is the professional tennis tournament held here in the South Florida area. It is actually currently held at Hard Rock Stadium, which is where the Miami Dolphins, the pro football team, plays. It's really interesting. What they do is they put the stadium court inside of the actual NFL stadium itself, and they use a hybrid of the actual permanent seats that are there inside the NFL stadium, and then they also supplement it with some temporary grandstands. In other words, they don't have you fully sitting in the NFL stadium because the tennis court is so much smaller than the football field, you wouldn't be able to see. It's somewhat of a quirky setup. I think it works. I would probably prefer, if I'm being candid, to just go to kind of a smaller, more tennis-centric facility. Not entirely sure why they don't do that. The parking situation also a little bit of a mess, but I digress. It was just a really nice evening out. They've done a great job here at the Miami Open when it comes to providing concessions, when it comes to providing just a really great fan experience in general. They've very much modeled it after the U.S. Open, the Grand Slam event in New York City in professional tennis. I actually worked many years ago for the USTA. I love the sport of tennis, and really wonderful evening out there. We caught some great matches. We caught Alexander Zverev defeating Karen Khachanov in straight sets at the men's end of the tournament spectrum there. That was a very entertaining match. Zverev, if you know anything about him, is a very talented tennis player. A little surprising that he has not won a Grand Slam yet. Have to think that is going to happen at some particular point there. But the more important point here, tennis aside, is just it is so important. It is so important to just do some stuff, guys. Get out there and, as the kids say these days, go touch grass. Sometimes just, you know, put the phone down, put the computer away, get out there into the real world, go for a walk, pick up the phone, call your parents, call your grandparents, just go to a sporting event, just get out there and do whatever you gotta do to stop thinking sometimes about this chaotic 24/7 nonstop news cycle, because the news cycle is not gonna go anywhere. It ain't going anywhere anytime soon. And sometimes the best way to keep your wits about you and to stay sane is to just soak it all in. And for us last night, the Miami Open was a really nice way of touching grass, as they say. In any event, that is it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed this episode of America on Trial. As always, make sure to subscribe and leave us that 5-star review. I'm Josh Hammer. We'll see you right back here tomorrow morning.